From Guelph, Ontario, this is The Smart Seed, and I am Leanne Shaken. About 8 years ago, I was living in Toronto, and I decided to take a nonfiction creative writing class at Ryerson University. And one of the stories that I had written was basically a day in the life of. And it was a story about my siblings and I going to the chicken barn. And I didn't think much of the story. However, it just happened to be one of the most popular stories that I had written for my fellow classmates. And I decided that it might be worth reciting a couple paragraphs. So bear with me. It begins by, "With our downcast expressions, weighted rubber boots, tattered jackets, and bright orange toques, we trudge through the snow to the chicken barn. A seemingly long 2-minute walk in the cold, our bodies, although not our spirits, are glad to reach the rusted steel door, which opens to thick, warm air, a byproduct of 6,000 chickens squawking in their cages. The chicken barn, a broken-down building complete with hens, an animal that I can never and will never sympathize with. Their feathers, their poop, and their god-awful stench is just as an important fixture in our lives as our home, church, or school. Whether we have to go to the chicken barn that day or not dictates whether that day is a good one or a bad one. Upon entering the barn, large wooden panels spread the width of the building, separating the entrance hall from the 5 never-ending rows of cages. Most days, the panel's heaviness forces me to push the panel with my back as my legs thrust against the wall. Once the panel is open, we push the egg cart through to one of the rows. Each row of cages consisting of 2 levels and made up of 4 segments, with 2 or 3 chickens squished into each cage." Now, one of the most popular responses that I got from the people in my class was basically, "We had no idea." And the reason why they had no idea and why they had never imagined a scenario where across Canada, in rural counties, thousands of children each day after school work in barns that are high in ammonia, dusty, smelly, is because they had never visited such a farm. And that experience that most people don't have allows companies to present an image and to present words that allow them to create a narrative for us. And often that narrative does not reflect reality. However, we don't question it because we don't have the knowledge and the experience to say, well, no, that's actually not the truth. These stories that are told to us and the images that are presented and don't reflect reality in most cases leads into what we will be talking about today. This week's episode focuses on the black pepper and the stories we tell. We all have a story that we would like to tell. The stories we choose to tell to our friends, family, acquaintances, and coworkers say a lot about how we would like to be seen. In marketing terms, our stories help create our brand. There are some that we frequently repeat when there is a new person to meet. That rhymes, my friends. They can be about lost relationships, nightmarish jobs, and great adventures. Collectively, these stories shape a narrative that we have perhaps subconsciously created. We choose to tell some stories over others, and we often choose to embellish some details and leave other details out. In the end, we are our own writer, and why we choose to tell the stories we tell has a lot to do with our motivations. Do we wish to make friends? Do we wish to get a promotion? Do we need to gain new customers? Do we need to maintain a competitive advantage? We have been telling our stories over thousands of years, and some have been utterly fantastical that you would be forgiven if you thought you had been plunged into the Game of Thrones. None more so than a few tall tales that were spun by some Arab spice traders hundreds of years ago. all in an effort to keep the origin of their spices secret from an entire continent. In the medieval ages, Europeans loved their spices, and they went batshit crazy over it. Some have argued that medieval European food would actually be more closely associated with modern-day North African or Indian cuisine compared to modern-day European cuisine. And it just wasn't one or two spices. Cooks tended to have 20 or so spices in their repertoire. The one spice that we will focus on, for it was about the most popular spice of the day, and subsequently changed the power dynamics within our world, was pepper. And when I say pepper, I mean black peppercorns and not chili peppers, which we can thank good old fuck-up Christopher Columbus for confusing us. Europeans loved black pepper, and back in the day it was expensive. They called pepper black gold, as it could be used as its own form of currency. There is even a term for it, peppercorn rent. The reason for the high price of black pepper during medieval Europe is the same reason why commodity prices tend to go up and down now. It is the relationship between supply and demand. To Europeans, pepper was fashionable, used medicinally and in religious ceremonies, therefore multiple uses to create demand. The supply, on the other hand, was tightly controlled. For being so fashionable, Europeans knew very little about where their spices came from. They knew pepper came from a place called India, which was out east somewhere over there, but they knew precious little about the country and its people, and could only guess on the routes to get there. At the time, the spice trade was largely controlled by Arab traders, who were the only people that knew about every aspect of the spice trade, from start to finish. The pepper farmers in India had no idea about the Europeans, and the Europeans reciprocated that ignorance. This gave the Arab traders a tremendous amount of power. They could buy the spices at a very affordable price and sell it at a very high price. However, they still had to defend those high prices, and in order to do that, they relied on stories that had been told for centuries. According to our Arab middlemen, pepper was grown in forests of pepper trees. Pepper was abundant. That wasn't the problem. The problem was in the harvesting of pepper. For, you see, the pepper trees were all guarded by poisonous snakes. In order to harvest the pepper, farmers had to set fire to the trees and drive away the snakes. It was the fires that turned white peppercorns black and gave them their dry and shriveled appearance. After each burning, the trees would have to be replanted, which required money and time, adding to the price. This myth survived hundreds of years. In actuality, pepper is a climbing vine plant, green in color and turns black and shriveled after it has been dried, and white after it has been soaked in water. Pepper also was certainly not the only spice that carried a myth. Cinnamon grew on inaccessible mountains, and in order to retrieve the cinnamon, you had to trick a type of bird, who happened to make their nests out of cinnamon. Locals would leave heavy pieces of meat out for the birds would take the meat to their nests, the weight of the meat would then break the nest, and the cinnamon would fall to the ground to be gathered. I'm guessing that's not exactly how it works. These myths were always doubted, however, weren't completely dispelled until a Portuguese explorer found a sea route to India in 1498. It was only when ignorance about a people, a place, and a spice was turned into knowledge, and the spice trade monopoly was dismantled, that the prices decreased and the spice trade normalized. It also just happened to be the beginning of European imperialism. Not such a good thing. Stories and myths only retain power when knowledge is absent and facts are unknown. We can tell our own stories to control our image and brand, yet it only takes time for our quirks to inadvertently be revealed, good or bad, and for the reality to seep out. This is the truth for most things. Once we see it, once we know it, we no longer believe the stories. Thank you to the Blue Dot Sessions from the Free Music Archive for their music contributions. Source material for today's podcast can be found at my website, www.thesmartseed.ca. If you are interested in seeing the process of harvesting, drying, and soaking pepper, I have linked to a pretty insightful BBC documentary on my website. Be aware, for some reason, the host gets really excited about pepper and cinnamon. That's it for now. Stay curious, my friends.